This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents is powered by InsureLit from Sun Life Malaysia.
Good morning. You're tuning in to Ringgit and Cents, the show all about personal finance. I'm Wong Xiaoning. Today, we're delving into one aspect of personal finance that might not be the most exciting, but is vital, which is estate planning. Preparing for the unforeseen, such as death or incapacitation, is crucial to ensure our loved ones aren't burdened with uncertainties and that our assets are distributed according to our wishes. Joining me to discuss this matter is Noor Fazlina. She's the Chief Executive Officer of Maybank Trustees Berhad. Good morning, Faz. Thanks for joining us. Now, can we start at the very beginning? What are the tools needed for estate planning?
Okay. Good morning, Xiaoning. Thank you for having me. I think this is a very important topic for all of us, regardless gender. And I think this is something that I would want to, you know, make it specific for women particularly. But when it comes to estate planning, we have two tools that we want to consider. One is will and one is trust. Will is only effective upon your death. And trust, it's effective during your lifetime, during your incapacitation, and of course, after your lifetime. So the basic estate planning tool that one must have is a will. Whether you like it or not, you got to have one will in place for you. Because remember, have you heard of the last will and testament?
Yeah, you see that a lot on TV shows, right? And movies.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So that's what it says. It represents you. It's your testament upon your death. Mm-hmm. And that becomes your representation upon your death. So that's why you need that basic estate planning tool for yourself.
Okay, and how? Let's start with wills first. How complicated is it to draft the will? Is it a cumbersome process? Can you actually even do it yourself? What makes a will valid?
If you want to write a will, you can do it online. You can hire a lawyer or you can do it through trustee companies, right? But when it comes to this sort of documents, I personally believe that you shouldn't DIY it, right? You can save it for your shelves. You can save it for, you know, wall painting and everything, right? But you know, for something that it's meant for your loved ones, for something that it's meant to be there when you're not around. Because you're not there to defend your document when you've passed on.
Yeah,
right?
You want clarity in the
document. You want to make sure that it's being specified clearly. And of course, if your family dynamic is not straightforward, you want to get advice, right? And you want it to do it properly, right? Of course, some people say, you know, it's just a piece of document, right? And people don't see the importance of it because unlike investment, you don't see the fruition now. If you invest, you could see the returns now. But when you write a will, you don't see anything, you know? Because it's only crystallized when you pass on, right?
Yes.
So, you know, it's very, very important to understand why a person must write a will. Because when you pass on, the first thing that happens to your assets, it will be frozen. And same goes to your debt as well. So during your lifetime, you are the one who's managing your assets and your debts. But when you kick the bucket, when you're 6 feet under, right? Then, you know, somebody's got to pick up that.
Yes.
Right? So this is where the documents come in hand, that the will comes in place to be your representation. And in that document, you will spell out who will be the appointed person who will manage your assets and liability. That now it's called estate.
Yeah, and they become the executor.
And they become the executor.
And then they are also beneficiaries, right?
So the will documents allows you to have an appointment of your executor, the one who helps to manage and administer your assets and liabilities. Then, of course, you would need that document to help you to clear all your debts. After you clear your debts, then only you can distribute your remaining to your loved ones.
Based on your own wishes,
right? Based on your own new wishes.
Okay.
Right? But of course, for Muslim, it's slightly different. But the gist of it, the fundamentals, still the same. Right?
Okay.
When you write a will, you got to be son of mine, above 18 years old. Right? And of course, you will need to have two witnesses to ensure that you are lucid when you write a will. Because the moment you pass on, when the document is being submitted to the court, the two witnesses who witness your signature, they will need to provide an affidavit to say that you were actually in the capacity to write the will, you know, just to make sure that there's no ambiguity in what you have written in your will.
Okay, and how does that differ for trust? Because that trust also ensures your wishes are carried out during your lifetime, right?
Yeah. So for trust, the word trust itself, right? So in Malay, we call it amanah. Mm. So you've heard about this tabung amanah, right?
Yes.
So when you create a tabung, that means somebody's got to manage it and you got to create it now, right? So when you as a person, you set up a trust, you have to appoint somebody to be your trustee to hold the funds or the assets that you put into a trust for the benefit of whoever that you would want to benefit from the trust. For example, I'm sure you heard about Paris Hilton being the trust fund babies. And,
yes.
Those stories that you hear, yeah. Right? So similar concept, right? And you know, parents put money into a trust and then the trustee then will be given a mandate as to how, through the letter of wishes, as to how the trust should be managed and administered.
Okay, so it could be things like provide my child a monthly stipend of 2,000 ringgit till he reaches the age of 30, yes. Something like that.
Yes, yes, correct. So what we do, we will make sure that the trust is robust enough.
Mm.
Because you when you put assets into a trust, my main priority is to safeguard and protect, right? Yes, I'm a trustee. I'm a bank trustee. But my role primarily as a trustee to safeguard and preserve. Now, who makes the money? Not me.
Yeah.
It's the banker, right? It's the investment person who makes the money. So, of course, this is where my role as a trustee to make sure we track and monitor the fund growth in accordance to the trust objective.
Okay. There is this misconception that estate planning is only for the wealthy. What do you say about this? And really, that's not the case, right?
No. No. I mean, that's not true, Xiaoning, because everybody dies, right?
Yeah, and everybody has usually some assets.
Yeah. So for example, like myself, I have few bank accounts, I have one house, I have a car. But does that make me as wealthy? I don't know. I mean, Xiaoning, how about you? Do you think that, you know,
everybody has a different reference points
correct,
in terms of wealth.
Exactly.
But so, as long as you have assets, you need to think about how you want to distribute
that
it, right?
That is correct. You if for so long you have one car, one bank account, right?
Mm.
And of course, if you have families, you have someone that you are cared for, you want to make sure that when you passed on, it's not what if, it's when you pass on, how, you know, your loved one is being taken care of, number one. Number two, if you have debts, how do you ensure that you don't pass down your debts to your family members? I mean, I think that's the last thing that anybody would want to do that. Especially when you're a parent, you don't want to pass on the burdens to your family members.
That's
right?
True.
More so if you have small kids.
So what is the estimated cost of having an estate plan, be it a will? I suppose a trust is more complicated, maybe if you're higher net worth, for example. So, right. But like a will?
If you want to DIY it, right? You know, we have as low as 298,
okay.
Right? But of course, you know, if you have specific wishes, if you have minor children, I strongly encourage you to, you know, seek advice from trustee companies, from legal advisors, right, who understand on probate matters.
Yes.
I mean, you know, when you have a toothache, you go to a dentist. You don't go to a cardiologist, right? So the same thing here, right?
Get the proper legal advice.
Correct.
Get it done by the right lawyer.
Lawyers, right? I mean, you can have family lawyer who's very good in litigation, but how sure are you that they are good in probate and succession planning matters, right?
So I suppose the amount of money that you spend on drafting a will is quite small and significant to your total assets.
Correct. Yeah. So which brings to the point, if let's say your total net worth, just normal people, say 500,000.
Yeah.
What is 298?
Not much.
Not much.
Insignificant.
Insignificant.
Yeah.
And that will really help your family in moving on to the next step. You know, they are already grieved. You know, they're in the grieving, you know, moment, you know, that you've passed on, you know, and on top of that, they got to deal with you know, your assets.
Yeah.
And if, let's say, you have debts and you have unwanted creditors that suddenly just come pops by to your house and say that, look, you know, your father actually owe me money. So what do you do then?
Yes.
You know, how do you expect your children to step up and, you know, get into your shoe and solve that?
So first, the other thing is, what happens if you become incapacitated? You know, sometimes people unfortunately have a stroke or they're in a coma. What role can estate planning play here? And what does the law say? Because I hear this word, living will. Is there such a thing?
So this is something that stakeholder like Medical Legal Society Malaysia, STEP Malaysia, Society of Trust and Estate Practitioner, we have been championing to ensure or to get our Mental Capacity Act updated, right? Because we don't really have a document in place to help individuals if, let's say, they're not in capacity to make decision financially and also medically. You know, there's no legal document for that. Because the current power of attorney that we have, the document power of attorney that we have, it's meant for transaction. It's not meant to handle individual affairs.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not meant to take care if, let's say, you are incapacitated. So that is why, you know, STEP Malaysia, MLSM, working together with Bar Council, you know, wanting to push this agenda, wanting to push of us Malaysia to have a lasting power of attorney, a document that help individuals to appoint someone to act on your behalf in the event you are not able to make your decision. So unlike in Singapore and UK, they have this in place, right?
So this is the gap in the law currently.
Correct. And I think the government is fully aware about it.
Okay.
Recently, our YB Kula Segren, he actually, you know, echoed as to what currently MLSM is doing. And, you know, he's committed in pushing this to the parliament, you know, to make sure that the act is being updated.
Yeah, because it needs to reflect what's happening now.
Yeah.
What, you know, that, because you also, like you say, you don't want things to be in limbo and life has to go on also. And there's fees to, you know, medical costs to pay, for example. Who's going to pay for that? You can't even take it from the person's estate to say, right?
Correct. And plus, estate happens only when you're passed off.
Yeah, you know? So unfortunately.
We are living in a world where, you know, with the advanced technology and everything, people are living longer.
Yeah.
But are we living better?
Yes, sometimes unfortunately not, right?
So how do we ensure that while we're still around, you know, we have the necessary framework in place to help us to move around? I think the if you've seen lately, there's quite a fair bit of aged care facilities, you know, mushrooming now in KL, in Penang, because there's a need to that.
Yeah, so there also is a need to change the legislation here, right?
The legislation here and also the stigma, the mentality that, you know, of course it's good to have your children to take care of you.
Yeah.
But I think we all have to step out and get into the reality where, you know, times are hard. Your children need to work. Your children have their own family. They need to take care of themselves too, right?
Yeah.
So we do not know what the futures are going to be like, right?
So make those plans today.
Correct.
Yeah.
You need to plan now.
I've been speaking to Noor Fazlina. She's the Chief Executive Officer, Maybank Trustees Berhad, on the process of estate planning. We'll be taking a short break for some messages. Don't go anywhere, because when we come back, we're going to talk about this from the female perspective. BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned for Ringgit and Sense, powered by InsureLit from Sun Life Malaysia.
BFM 89.9, welcome back. You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense. I'm Wong Shaoning. Today, we're discussing how we can get our affairs in order in preparation for the inevitable. Joining me to discuss this is Noor Fazlina. She's the Chief Executive Officer for Maybank Trustees Berhad. Faz, I want to talk about estate planning from the perspective of tax, because other than death, the unavoidable is tax.
Yes.
You know, so what aspect of a trust or will is subject to that in Malaysia?
Okay. So in Malaysia, trusts and wills may be subject to various taxes, including stamp duty, inheritance tax. Of course, I'm sure you've heard this rumor saying that estate duty is going to come up anytime soon.
Yeah, inheritance tax is going to come back.
Yeah.
I think it was here. It was implemented in Malaysia.
Yeah, and it got abolished in 1991. However, this could change as years goes by, right?
Yeah.
Because I think it's one of the revenue for the government. And as well, in terms of making sure you want to have a good equality for all people, right? So that is the need to have an estate tax in place. For trust, it starts now, during your lifetime. So in the eyes of IRB, it behaves like a Sendirian Berhad.
Ah, okay.
So any income that's generated from the trust is taxable at 24%.
Like the normal corporate tax?
Like the normal corporate tax.
Okay.
Right? So people say, if us, you know, if it's under my personal name, I don't need to pay tax, right? I say, yes, that's true. But what are you getting, you know, apart from tax? You know, why do you want to embark into this journey, right? What is your objective, actually? It's about asset protection. It's about succession planning.
Mm.
It's about avoidance of probate and all those things. You don't want to go to the court.
Mm.
So that is the plus point as to, you got to weigh it, lah,
yeah.
You know?
The cost versus the advantages.
Correct. And also, if, let's say, you're an individual where your tax bracket is more than 24%, so it's kind of like a saving there a little bit, right? I mean, but of course, that is the T20 kind of people, right?
The T5 or T10.
Yeah, so, but coming back to the pros of having a trust, you know, versus, you know, you can't run away from taxes, Charming.
Yes, you can't, right? And you shouldn't.
And you shouldn't, yeah. Right? So, you know, whatever is due, you got to pay, lah, right?
Yeah.
So, but for will, of course, it's not subject to any taxation, but upon distribution of assets, some taxes might apply. For example, like RPGT. So RPGT, the date starts from the date of death.
This is real property gains tax,
yes.
Right?
So that happens if, let's say for example, you know, if you have a will, you say that you want to give your property to your siblings in equal shares, and then one of the siblings says that, no, I don't want to give it to my mother, absolutely. So, because there's a change of beneficial there, so that's where the RBGT comes into play, right?
Okay, so it depends on the specific transaction.
Yes, yes. And of course, stamp duties, under the Stamp Duty Act, is nominal at 10 ringgit as well.
Now, I want to focus on women. So, you know, why is it important for us to actually then focus on estate planning? I mean, and what are the unique challenges women face when considering estate planning?
I don't sound so...
negative?
You know, woman dominant or what, but I think you could see women on average outlive men.
Yes, we do.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That's a fact.
Yeah. So your basic estate plan in the traditional family situation sees the first spouse to die, leaving majority of his asset and his liabilities to his wife, i.e. woman, right? So therefore, it's typically the female estate plan that needs to control, that has to be controlled and has to be managed, right? And of course, the ultimate disposition of wealth within or outside the family, right? So, in the course of distributing this to your spouse, i.e., your wife, traditionally, women have less involvement in financial decisions.
Yeah, we seem to take historically take a back seat.
Correct,
but that shouldn't be the case.
That shouldn't
right?
be the case, right? So giving a proper solid foundation financial literacy to women, I think that's very important because without giving education, without giving knowledge, not just women, anybody, right?
Yeah.
I think knowledge is so powerful, right? That will actually equip you to be independent, to make your own judgment.
So you should write your own will, for example. Have your own will. Decide how you want to distribute your own assets.
Yes, you should.
Right? Not every asset that is... well, how do I say? Not every asset that you think is yours, you know, some of it might just be... what happens if it's jointly owned, for example, or if it's under your name? You have to plan for all that, right?
Correct. So, for example, if, let's say, you have a joint property with your husband, right? So, doesn't mean that, you know... and, of course, under our National Land Code, when you pass on, your 50% doesn't go to your spouse immediately.
It goes to your estate.
It goes to your estate. Right.
And then you should make plans for that estate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and for all you know, when you embark into the journey of having a joint property with your spouse, it's actually meant for your children.
Yeah.
For all you know. So how do you have a clarity of your intention? Where do you put it? Right. So this is where ultimately why the will document is very important.
And how, under Sharia law, how different is estate planning for Malaysian Muslim women?
So this is the misconception. Again, people think that for Muslim, you don't need to write a will, or we call it wasiat, right? Because there's an inheritance law in place, the Faraid law, right? Women get how many? 1/8, 1/8. The male get 1/4 if, let's say, you have children. But that is not the case, Shaoning, because, yes, there is a law that says that, but people tend to think that is the case, right? In actual fact, the law says that for a Muslim, when you write a will, it is to ensure that your charity continues beyond.
Okay.
Your charity continues after your lifetime. So the Muslim, the moment we pass on, everything stops except for your good deeds. So how do you ensure your good deeds continue?
Yes.
Right? So this is why Muslims are encouraged to write a will to make sure that your charity continues, but you can only go up to 1/3 of your asset.
Okay.
So if you read up to any literature about Muslims' will, they say that you can only bequeath up to 1/3 of your asset, right? So that it's actually meant for your charity.
Mm. So you can decide what to do with that 1/3.
Yes. So you can. So for example, myself, I can say up to 1/3, right? So for example, my total asset is 300,000. So up to 100,000, I can give it to charity. I can give it to Xiaoning. I can give it to
To my son, for example.
Well, because it's charity, it cannot be your family member.
Oh, it cannot be okay.
Your fried air, they call it. It cannot be your split. For myself, my husband, my parents, and my sons are my S.
Okay.
So they cannot inherit my 1/3.
But anyone else can.
Anyone else can.
Okay.
Because they have been provided for.
All right, I understand.
Under the Faraid law, all right? But now, when it comes to that Faraid law, so people say, hey, you must follow the calculation.
Mm.
But in actual fact, the Muslim law is very clear that the Faraid law here, that has been mentioned in the Quran, it's actually behaves like a dispute resolution.
Mm.
So in my will, say, for example, I say that up to 1/3 of my asset, I would like to give to an orphanage home, right? The balance, I would like to give it to my son, absolutely.
Mm.
Right, the balance of it, the balance 200,000 to give it to my son, absolutely. But in Islamic law, the 200,000 is actually belong to my husband, my parents, and of course my son, right? And if, let's say, my husband and my parents agree to follow my wishes to say that everything, the 200,000 to be given to my son, it's okay.
They can. Okay.
Right? There's no such thing that my son can only get
X percent.
Yeah, X percent. You got to follow what it's written. It's not that. It's meant a dispute resolution. So if, let's say, my husband said no, then that's where the calculation comes in.
Okay. Right? So in a way, the will is good so that you are clear. You're clearly stating your intended wishes.
Correct.
And then your family members know what your position is like in terms of how the distribution of asset is going to be.
Yeah. You are morally obligated to listen to my pesanan.
Ah, okay.
Right?
Yes.
And of course, since I have a minor child, the appointment of guardian.
Okay, that's critical, isn't it?
That's very critical. I urge every parent that when you have children under 18 years old, make sure that you have your will instrument or your wasiat instrument in place, and to mention about on how would you like your children to be cared for.
So this is the most important part about planning to ensure that the care of your minor children is definitely considered, right?
Yes. That's why it's important to have the will instrument in place. That's why it's important for Muslim to have the wasiat instrument in place to make sure that you can appoint a guardian to take care of your child when you're not around. More so when both parents are not around. Because during COVID, you've seen both parents gone.
Yeah, suddenly children are orphaned, sadly.
Correct. We had cases MH370. Yeah. Same thing. Parents, both parents gone.
So the other thing for us is how important is it to have that discussion about your intentions if you are going to get married or if you're married? Because some people will say, oh, it's such an awkward discussion to have, right, with my spouse about money. How important is it?
It is a difficult conversation. I was just telling to your colleague before I came in, nobody wants to talk about my topic because it's very difficult.
Sensitive sometimes.
Yeah, it's very sensitive. Some of them say it's taboo to even talk about it. And again, it's your privacy.
Yeah.
Right? You're giving somebody to invade your privacy.
Mm.
But I always believe that if you cannot have this difficult conversation now, what makes you think that you or whoever that around you can handle when the situation becomes harder?
That is true. Relationships are built on having those difficult conversations.
Yeah.
That's all the time we have for Ringgit and Sense. I've been speaking to Noor Fazlina. She's the Chief Executive Officer of Maybank Trustees Berhad. Join us again next week for more discussions on personal finance. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise. I'm Wong Xiaoning from The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense was powered by InsureLit from Sun Life Malaysia, empowering you towards a financially fit future.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.